Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your host, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, welcome back into the House of Mystery. Of course, I'm Al Warren. So now we've got a co-host who's also a guest today. It's, of course, yes. Eric Shapiro, writer, movie script maker. He's just a movie maker. He's just, my God, entrepreneur.
Well, thank everything. You. Thank you.
Yeah. So you kind of got lots of stuff going on now. So you've also started a new thing called the Psychic Arts Center. Right.
That's it. Yeah. And this is the first time I've ever spoken publicly about it.
Okay. So now this, for me, I look at this and I think, well, of course, I like people, friends are friends, and no matter what, I support them. So, but yeah. I look at this and I see this as a complete turn from what you've been doing. So,
yeah, likewise. It's nothing I ever expected to happen in my life. And it's been a long road there. And I can only imagine what certain people are thinking. Like, you're friends with me on Instagram, but I only have like 100 friends there. It's a private account. Those are people I actually know. So for the past couple years in that small space where I act more open and silly and vulnerable and weird with my actual sense of humor, etc., I've started openly like uncloseting myself as psychic. And then I only in the past week or so mentioned it on Facebook, where I have a lot of followers and a lot of engagement. And that was daunting, because it's like people are absolutely going to think I'm a scammer. You know, I'm full of it. I'm delusional, whatever. And right. So that was a big step. But, you know, I think 40% of the population believes in it. So it's nearly half. So there has been support also. And then now this is like a different gradient, a different magnitude talking about it in this context. Yeah.
Yeah. And you got to remember that, you know, you've kind of been more in the nonfiction academia side world, like writing with the newspaper, and you're doing articles, you're writing about things that are substance, you know, they're fact, like this and that, and you're kind of reporting. So the people around expect that kind of thing from you, product from you. Now, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's commercial, but they're expecting it from you. So I think it'll be more of a surprise to them, that circle of people.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what's interesting is, so my wife and I have owned this newspaper, the Milpitas Bead, for 6 years. And at the beginning of that, so I was a ghostwriter and speechwriter by profession for many years leading up to that. So at the beginning of the newspaper experience, I had all the skills to do journalism, because I could write things, I could research things. But my wife was a professional journalist, and she wanted to start this company, and she wanted me to adjust my skill set to do journalism, which I was game for. It was something new. And since then, you know, the the newspaper has a lot of readers, it's won awards, and it's become a credible entity. But just to the point you're speaking toward, early in that period, early in the 6 years, I had to prove myself to the readers, and there's tens of thousands of them, so you're under all this scrutiny, that I could communicate factually, and I wasn't always great at it. Like, not that I would lie or be wrong. It was more like contextual. It was more like, oh, he's not understanding how this committee or this government department works, and he's only telling 2/3 of what's relevant. So there was a huge learning curve where I had sleepless nights. I was like, oh, I'm screwing this up. And I would end up, if you look back at my earliest articles, so many of them at the bottom in italics say that they've been updated because I had to correct them. So that was a long cycle. So not only is what you're saying true, but it took a long time to even earn the trust of the readers, right? Right. So then, like 2 years ago, I won a major journalism award in California. It's one of the top awards for my opinion writing. But opinion writing also is still, like, it's not fiction. It's steeped in fact, as you're saying. Like, it's not just, there's nothing, like, metaphysical about it. So right. This psychic stuff had been happening for over a decade, or about a decade. And finally, when I won that award, it gave me the confidence and the understanding. It's like, I would kind of prefer to communicate from this side of myself, because it is happening, and it's something I've verified with probably by now like 100 people, and it's natural. So it's almost like I have to wear a different cloak when I'm talking like a quote unquote normal person. So it was like you're saying at the beginning, like it was nothing I ever expected, but I want to kind of talk about how I got there.
All I'm saying is I think when you told me, my reaction was, well, good luck. There's going to be a whole lot of heartache here because I've seen it in action, and it's going to change your life significantly, because a lot of the people that you thought were one way and thought of you one way are going to change. And at the same time, you're going to get a lot of people that you had never been around before that come over to your side and start being around you. And I think it's very overwhelming. So, I have to warn you.
Yeah. I think that's a fair warning and a good warning. And I've already seen the beginnings of it. And, you know, I do stuff in Hollywood. Like, I have relationships with producers and scripts, and, you know, there's a part of me that's defiant. Like, you know, they can't be the boss of me or tell me what to do. But there's also a part of me that doesn't want to be the insane one in the circle. But as you said, I'm entrepreneurial. So I feel I'm always independent and will always, you know, have projects and my own things going on. And that's going to be the way I am. And I don't want to compromise it. But you're absolutely right. Like, I've already seen a couple cases where people took a big step back. And at the core, what's really been interesting, which I did not expect, is my parents are very supportive of it, which is crazy. I mean, I tested it on both of them, and they've always been supportive. But for them to be supportive of this is like, really, like they're stepping into a different area, you know, like, and my mother's kind of psychic, but it's not honed. Like, she's really not that mystified by it. Like, she's an artist, art gallery owner, but she can do it. Like, she always is, like, for years I've been asking her questions. Like, she always knows what's around the corner. So there's a familial genetic component, but just the same, nobody was ever expecting me to step that way, let alone my father, who's not really inclined to support that sort of thing. And then with my sister, it's become where she, I've had to limit her. Like, she comes to me with questions. She was coming daily. Once she realized, like, oh my God, like, things are being verified, she started coming every day, and I had to limit it to once a week. And now it's down to once a month, because the liability with that is, like, you know, I can't be used as a crutch, because then the person asking the questions won't grow. And then, like, I'm becoming a toxin, you know, like, you should only be taking glimpses. But so that was interesting. So my birth family, my parents and sister, we're all not only very supportive, but with my sister, there's a level of buy-in that's significant, where she's always asking questions. But all three of them are coming with that. So that was a big part of it, because if it wasn't safe within that zone of people, you know, I might have reconsidered ever talking openly about it. And then with my wife, you know, my wife has always felt I'm the best writer, like, you know, very, very supportive also. I mean, I wouldn't be married to her if she wasn't. Like, I'm a big support person. But I got to tell you, I think she, and again, like, it comes through, she's the first person I started doing it with. And, like, of course, I know her really well, so I can't read her life, because her life is my life, you know. But I started reading other things with the people in scenarios around us. And she started keeping a notebook, and this went on for months. And then too many things were hitting. It was like above 90%, where we couldn't ignore it, right? So then I started doing it with other people all over the place. And she, I think, has supported this more than anything I've ever done. And again, she claims me, as most people in the public space do, most people contextualize me as a writer. So, and she, there's nobody who loves my writing more. I mean, she has nothing but the highest things to say, but I would still say she supports this more than that. Just because there's like, and so it's, so I would say that because of those four people, my parents, sister, and wife, that's given me a bedrock of like, okay, like if they, because I ask them all the time, I'm like, you really support this? Because this is crazy. And I got to tell you, Al, also, like, unless I'm reading, I myself am skeptical about it until the reading starts. And it's like, how the hell is this happening? So there you go.
Yeah. Well, I think that's good. I think, I mean, that means you've got good relationships with them, because quite often what separates family is when one of the children or one of the people in the family takes a different route or different life than the rest expect. And so it's tough because sometimes people closest to you see you as one thing and they'll never see you as something different. But that's a good choice. That means you're in a good surrounding then. That's perfect.
Yeah, because, no, thank you. And I think you're right. I think it's also like it doesn't take much either. Like I've, as a writer, even if I've gone into a genre somebody's not expecting, they can turn at me. Like even fiction to nonfiction, it's like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. Like, and yeah, of course, like you mean something to them, so they want more of the same experience if one experience really worked for them. But yeah, this is definitely a departure. I mean, it's completely wild. And I have to tell you, like all week as I was anticipating talking to you about it, like it's terrifying. Like it's paralyzing. Like, cause I know it sounds insane. Like I'm an undiagnosed schizophrenic. Like it's hard to verify. It also, not only putting like mental health stuff aside, like there's the attention part. This is what bothers me the most. It's, like I'm special and I'm gifted, that like that would be my motive. And you know, I don't need to communicate this way. Like, cause I'm established as a writer and filmmaker. And like, and I actually am better positioned in those zones than I ever have been. So I know there's risk, but I also have seen too much freaky stuff happen to ignore it. So that's where I am.
Yeah. So now when we talk about the word psychic and we talk about the words medium, and of course I worked in the industry years ago, of course, but, There is a difference within the industry of what they call themselves. A psychic is foreseeing future, and a medium is communicating with past, really.
Yeah.
So where do you fit in, and what is it that you consider is happening to you? Like what which area or both?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I just, for my website, it's not on the site yet, I interviewed my mentor. Her name is Melissa St. Hilaire. She's a good psychic, and one thing I complained about to her is how these things – but I'm just kind of like this. So I shouldn't drag all psychics, but the way these things get partitioned, like you're clairvoyant or you're clairsentient, just doesn't intuitively gel with me. But you already said earlier in the interview, like I'm a kind of all over the place person. Like I'm always juggling. So, I have done mediumship. So, you know, I have, done readings across the veil to people, with people that have passed, a number of times. I've also realized I'm able to do it with animals. And I'm also, but you know, the mainframe is psychic, and it does encompass the future, but it's also reading like insight, like into things that are going on. Like, you know, a lot of times people have questions that are urgent about interpersonal dynamics, like what this person is thinking or what their motive is and things like that. And in the course of reading that, it might be more present tense, but there's also an apprehension of outcomes or where the path is leading.
Right. So,
yeah, and I'm happy to explain. Al, you won't offend me if you express any degree of ambivalence or neutrality or skepticism. I promise it won't bother me, because I probably on some level feel the same, because I, you know, it is odd. And I also, it'll allow me to kind of explain in a mechanistic way how I think it works, which will probably sound kind of banal when I start talking about it. Yeah.
So what is it that you want people to understand most about it?
Here's how I've been explaining it lately, because there's been like, when I started exploring it with my wife Rhoda, and then we did that one-to-one with a few months over a few months, and you know, I'm very practical, like and I'll even say baldly, this business, this website I'm starting, if this does not function, I'm not talking about monetarily, I'm talking about being of service, like if it's not stable, like if the people aren't getting value. And I don't mean value like, oh, I'm saying some abstract things and it has interpretable meaning and they can feel good about themselves. I mean, like, if they don't feel like something, if I'm tapping in, I'll stop doing it. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how I've been the whole way down the road exploring. And it's like, if I'm going to do readings, like, they've got to work. And I did so many for 2.5 years before I really started talking about it, like, just randomly on social media or whatnot. So the more I've been talking about it, there are certain friends in my circle that are curious how it works. And I'm going to tell you the metaphysical way I describe it. And then I'll tell you the more grounded way. So the metaphysical way is I'm tapping into my spirit guides. So I became, through meditating and through having lost people close to me, I became aware of a zone of perception. It's to the right of me. It's like near my right ear. It's like near the right side of my head. It's kind of a valve. And I became aware that info was flowing through it, right? And I personified or gave a personality to the source of the sentience that seemed to be communicating with me. And they appear to me to be silver wolves, right? But I'm also aware, even though they don't like it when I say this, like they lash back, I'm also aware that could just be an element of me. And it's me communicating with myself or tapping into a branch of my intuition that's available to everybody that most people don't use. And so we can put the wolves aside, even though, again, they object to that, and just forget about that. Maybe that's just a personality I give them because it's romanticized and it's sexy and it's like something exciting, right? But in the more grounded way, what I want people to understand is there, you know, intuition in and of itself, putting aside psychicness, can't be quantified. I mean, there's a certain zone of intelligence all day long amongst all of us, but some of us sharper than others, that is simply non-quantifiable. It's simply intuition. It's the feel you have for somebody. It's your read on somebody's personality. There's drastic and extreme truth within it, but there's no way. It's like loving somebody. There's no way to prove it. You know, that's why we write songs and poems about it. Like, it's like it exists in a zone of feeling, right? So there's a branch of intuition I've discovered. And the way I think it works is that all day long as human beings, you know, we're all pretty much like a binary. We're all like two people. In other words, like all day long, all of us in our heads are talking to ourselves. So to talk to yourself, like there has to be like some semblance of a talker and a listener. And anybody that's ever had anxiety knows that can multiply. Like you can not only be watching your mind and watching your own thoughts, but you can be watching yourself, watching them, and watching the watcher watching them. It can go become a hall of mirrors. So, but there is this multilateral awareness in the psyche. And in a general frame, day to day, it's some semblance of a passive mind and an active mind. So there's the mind that does the work and pays the bills and talks to people and has a personality and an ego structure. And that's your mind. But there's also another quiet inner awareness that is aware of that mind and everything it's up to. And I'm telling you, my discovery has been is that that mind, the watcher, I call it the absent referent, the quiet one, is psychic. And it's there in every personal life. Now, some people are more egoic and ego-driven. Many people are. Or many people just don't have the schedule or the meditation practice or the room to sort of, you know, spend time within that zone. But if you're open to that zone of the watcher, there's so much information there that it's just limitless. And I thought, you know, of course, all of this sounds crazy on a certain level. So I've read studies. One of them is on the website, like, by a quantum physicist who speaks to things I was experiencing on my own without ever having researched anything. He was talking about how through history in different religions, like in Buddhism and Taoism and different places on the planet, shamanism, meditation is always what starts psychic ability. That's exactly what happened with me. It came online in the course of meditating. I realized something that I wasn't accustomed to in my mental awareness was waking up and sparking on my grid. And then something was happening. So that's historic. And then the other thing he said, which was really odd, because this ties into how I do readings, I always ask people to come with questions. Like, they need specific questions. Doesn't have to be detailed. It can be very simple. You don't have to give me the answer in the question. But, you know, I need a question because it hits the wolves or it hits that inner awareness like it's a lightning rod. And then I can tap in and get all kinds of information. And the same physicist said in his article, and this is a science guy, he said, there's probably not any question in the world that can't be answered psychically. And that's been my exact experience. It's like, so it's a lateral, like, column. It's like a branch of intuition that's off center from what we're used to functioning in. And because of the design of our day-to-day lives with capitalism, with, and I'm not making a political statement, but truly, like, the way economics work, the way what is expected of us each day, the calendar, the clock, our schedules, our obligations, our bills, our bank accounts, it zones our awareness in just such a way that it obstructs this aspect of our psyches.
So how have you come to rely on this, but to a point where you can actually do it for other people and feel comfortable with it?
I have to meditate a little bit before the session begins. So I have to be a little plush and kind of relaxed, because meditation is all just about quieting the mind. So it's just like you have to bring your mental chatter to zero, right? So then I feel that warms up that zone I was just describing. And it really is the sort of thing where each time I start reading, I don't think it'll work. Because again, I'm also, you know, a possessor of a regular mind. So I think it's like, it's ridiculous, right? So I have to revert. And that's why, you know, there's wolves. I'm like, I'm a secretary. I'm a receptionist and a go-between. I'm going to see what they say. And that's not to bring responsibility off myself, but that's literally the only way I can do a reading. So I'm channeling something, and it might just help me navigate it by picturing a me and picturing a them. So there can be a ping pong. But I'm just trying to pick up what they're saying. And it's become, I've done it with enough people that there's enough of a level of confidence when it starts that there's a good and high enough chance, probably 95% or more, that it'll have substance. And what I've usually found, and Melissa, my mentor, has had this experience also, is that in the course of the reading, generally early, they'll lay claim to something that I couldn't possibly know. Like, I couldn't have learned it on social media. There's something they never told me. And then that'll come through just to open the conversation and develop trust. And it's weird because there are, you know, when you watch TV shows about this sort of topic, and I know you've been involved in a lot of these projects, there's there are sort of tropes, right? Like, oh, like, for example, I was reading a friend of mine and I spoke to his deceased grandmother, and she mentioned a blue dress, and she said that was relevant to his mom, who's still alive. So we took the information back to his mom, and she said her mother, the deceased woman to whom I had spoken, had a blue dress that she loved. Right. So like, you watch these TV shows, you're always hearing about, oh, the golden ring and the blue dress. And it sounds corny, right? It's like objects, like there's something basic about it. But I realized that I think the information processes in that way, because it's like, it's the only way to verify that there's another awareness there. Like, the only thing they can't point to something immaterial or abstract. They're going to point to like, you know, something you can hold in your hand. So there's a lot of that comes through. And then some readings, it's like all, like, it depends who I'm talking to, too, because people's minds are all constructed differently. So depending on the person's level of, like, for example, if somebody's halfway open to it, they'll get like a halfway, like a lot of stuff will come through and it'll be strong and solid and they can verify it. But there'll be a lot of stuff in there that breaks apart in the rocks of vagueness, because they can only hear so much. That's how they're wired. Other people that are more open, I got to be careful saying this because I don't want to just say that, oh, I'm scamming them and they're just more agreeable, so they accept everything I say. But there is other people that show up and it's like, oh my God, like all this information is gushing in and they're over there blown away that I just know one thing after the other. Like, honestly, it's interesting because I seldom talk about it at this length or depth, but I might have even just hit the limit of my ability to explain it, because there's also a part of the pie chart where I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's kind of always the question, right?
Yeah.
I always, personally, the people that have all the answers are the ones I trust the least.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that kind of goes back, not to force the parallel, not to shoehorn this back into the other topic. That might be part of why I have a bit of an attitude about all the systematic stuff that goes on with psychics, like the clairvoyant, clairsentient. And again, I'm not rejecting it. I'm not saying that different psychics can't have different specialties or strengths or areas. But I think when things get too, the word's not systematic, standardized, I start I get annoyed with it, because it's like, the truth is, it is more of a question. This is more of a question mark than a period, what I'm dancing with here. So that's why it's reliable enough that I have no qualms about somebody paying me to do it for them. And I also think it's helpful, and there's something amazing about it that can create faith and healing. It's a very special experience. That in mind, like, I'd be lying if I said I knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah, because that's what bothers me most about it is the fact that every time, like, I don't really watch them now, but when you could watch any of those shows, they all have the same formulas, the same wording, the same same behavior, the same rules. Like, as if there's a book to read that tells you. And I don't buy it because the worst part is a lot of people that might have sort of intuit or some sort of psychic abilities or able to pick up things in their mind, try to fall into those rules or make those rules apply to what they do. And that always, it always sort of bothers me because of it, because there is no rules.
Right. I hear you.
You know, and that's what drives me nuts about them, but that's me.
Yeah, I know. I think we honestly have that in common. And I think it's in any, I've never been a joiner. Like, I'm a writer and I have friends that are writers. And I'd say most of my closest friends are creative, but I'm never one to be like part of the writer's group or the writer's scene. And it's because of exactly what you're talking about. It's like there's tropes and standards and conformity, and it's just part of human nature. Right. And it goes back to what I was saying about the blue dress. Like, there's something in me that feels allergic to the fact that that's how it's processing. Because I'm like, what am I? And I'm not making fun of Jonathan Edward. By all accounts, like, he's solid, right? Or by many accounts. But I know that he's real up on, like, okay, is anybody here missing a key? You know what I mean? Like, so I'm like, I can't believe that the info actually has that nature and that, you know, because I just happened upon it. Like it was never anything I felt I had any need for in my life, you know, and the other thing about those TV shows is, and this is part of, I know we talked about the possibility of me doing it here. Like, it doesn't even matter because people would be skeptical anyway, because we know each other. We're in a controlled setting. You could edit it. And I'll be completely honest. If I had a bad hit, let's say I started reading you and I made six calls and five of them were right, I would ask you to edit the sixth one out, because I'm human and I'm trying to sell something.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I believe in the other five, you know what I mean? So like, so it's the corruptible nature of doing it.
Well, and working on the shows, you know, people think that, you know, they see a half hour show and you got John doing, you know, the readings and everything's great and it's done. But, you know, those shows are like in the taping of 6-8 hours of taping all day. And then you take the winners and put it into your half hour show.
Oh, that's exactly it. That's exactly it.
But yeah, they don't see that. They just see the finished product and think, wow, he just walks right in and can go, hey, you got this, and it picks up and that. It's like, no, there was a lot of time where it wasn't happening and things weren't going, and you're going 4 hours and then everyone's doing lunch and coming back and you only had two things recorded. So
yeah, that's exactly it. And also, like, then it gets into, like, also what we're talking about lends itself to, I think, the most sober reason that people are skeptical and have a right to be skeptical is that a lot of stuff, a lot of viable, confirmable info can be arrived at through hunches and guesswork. It really can. Like, you know, like, for example, you, and this is part of why you're good at your job, is you're a really good judge of character. And I've always known that about you. And I know that's something you know about yourself. So it's like, how does that even work? Like, how would we even quantify that Al is a good judge of character? Who knows? I mean, it's part of your animal nature. You have a sensor in your brain that navigates reality from that vantage point and goes from there, right? So, but nothing of that, nobody in most societies or most anywhere would claim that as magical or mind-blowing. They would just say, he has good intuition. And I think that's part of why a lot of psychics call themselves intuitives, to ground it a little and make it more approachable and less woo-woo. But I definitely, in my own experience, have seen, and again, I wouldn't be here if I hadn't seen enough that supersedes that level. It's like, how is this happening? Yeah. And what's weird is practicing it, it's not like a muscle where you build it and it gets tighter. Like, I guess I've developed more confidence and it's become more predictable. I know statistically that when I dip in, it's likely to work. But it's interesting because even though I practiced it to verify it so I could convince myself of it, and also the people around me that I love and care about, my close friends, that I could acclimate them to this. Like I said before, there's a part of me that thinks it's completely insane. It's complete nonsense. And I don't get it. So this is what I'm dealing with. Yeah,
I think that's a good thing in a sense, that because then you'll always be careful and questioning what you are. But I also think on the other side of it, what that does is that it puts you under a lot of stress, because what happens is when you become out in the public like this, you're going to attract a lot of people that are looking for some sort of answer that might not be really possible, you know, like it's beyond like they're looking for something so far out, you know, they're in a lot of pain and stuff. So this I think what that will interpret to you into a lot of stress and anxiety.
That's interesting. I'll let you know as it unfolds. And what I have seen, which is kind of adjacent to what you're saying, like, I haven't seen, like for the most part, when it comes to like big concerns or questions, like, will I get pregnant or is this person going to die? Like, things that are really extreme. I've seen that the asker usually puts a reasonable cap on the expectation, almost like they don't want to do that to me, which is fair, because like you're reaching into like zones of total certainty. And I'll be honest with you too, because I don't want to sell myself short. The likelihood is that what I come back with will be solid in my experience. But also, like, you know, in fairness, we're all involved in a collective mystery of perception, and none of us knows what's going on the planet. So there's going to be limits. But what I have seen that's more adjacent to what you're describing, which definitely has caused me stress and even anger, is the person asking the questions trying to manage the level of bulk or detail of what I'm saying. Like, in other words, they'll try to push the guides to be granular and completely explicit. Like, they'll get a bunch of hits, they'll get a bunch of verification, but they can't settle, so they have to pop the hood open and look at the engine closer and be like, all right, let's look at this screw, look at that screw, what about this? And then it's like you've got to be kidding. Like, we like, if this is really going on, which I think it is, I am interfacing with entities that are like a trillion years old, and it's a miracle I can hear anything they're saying at all. So you're gonna have to sort of like roll with how it comes through, you know what I mean? Like, so it's interesting when people try and micromanage the reading. Like, ooh, if they know this, if that came through, all right, now I want a computer printout of every detail. It's like, well, there's going to be drop off because I'm over here trying to interpret it.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the heartache you're in for. It's because people are, you know, so and so died, and how did they die, and why did they die, and what were they they in pain? Were they thinking? And you're going to attract that, and those sometimes are things that you're never going to be able to answer, and that's not good enough. There's people that suffer with things that have happened to them, and that's the problem. And so that's where the anxiety and depression comes in, from what I've been through and seen and worked with. That's
right. You end up carrying too much of a load, whether through empathy or just realizing your own limits. Right. Like you don't want to be their therapist. That is a really good point too. And I have to play it as a blaze.
No, of course. It's part of your process, but it's just
a journey.
It's just being aware that that tends to come with it. Because, not only that, because going back to the TV guys, which I don't want to bash too much, but the thing is, it's trained people to expect that outcome.
Oh, because they'll be totally bowed and zapped.
Right. You see Chip Coffee on there, and he's freaking out about this and that, or you see James Fran Prague and all these TV psychics giving them the answers, and people crying and going, "I can't believe this." And so they're trained to accept that as what it is, and that's what they're looking for. So when they go to you, they're going to want that. And that's kind of not necessarily what really happens.
Right. Well, yes and no. I mean, there definitely have been wows and epiphanies.
Oh,
and
for
I've
sure.
seen a lot. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I know what you mean. Like in terms of total conclusive solvency and like I'm burdened with like solving their life. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Right. Someone can come to you with an issue that happened to their loved one, and you might not get anything. You might be just kind of going around
and
doing nothing. And so, but their expectations are what they see on TV is what I'm saying.
Right. No, well said. No, and I'm glad you're being so candid about it. I'm glad both of us can be so candid about it, because the alternative is me coming on expecting with the presumption that you have to completely uphold this from every dimension, not just the validity of it.
I question everything. It doesn't mean it's not a lack of respect when you question.
Oh, sure.
It's about knowledge. It's about trying to learn. So I don't
look
at that as an insult. Now,
I don't see it that way for a moment.
One thing that I find, this is going to be probably the most curious thing, and probably one thing you will have to deal with down the road, is now you come from a Jewish family. And you
yes,
have a Jewish faith. And so there's a God, Abraham God, and you.
Well, I don't subscribe to the faith, but Jewish culture, I mean, also,
right,
like, it's interesting because the faith also is very tied
in. But it's so tied in. Like, it's together. It's so
intertwined
that it's hard to get away from it in a sense. And plus, the world has a lot of religion.
It's an ethno-religion. So,
so how are you going to, first of all, one is how would you deal with that and religious people? But the second one is when has this changed your thoughts? I don't want to say beliefs, but thoughts on what afterlife is or what happens when people die? And also, is there some sort of a religion, or can the religion work with what you think? Like, what's your whole... How are you reading religion, which comes with this?
Really great question. I mean, of course, religion is so similar to so many other lenses through which we approach life, in terms of like people have a certain degree of freedom in most religions, I would say in the Western world, to use the religion as they see fit, right? Like, one thing that's fun about Judaism, I'm gonna bastardize the quote, but there's some quote about the Torah that there's 70 different interpretations of every word in the Torah, and everyone is wrong. That's a Jewish quote. Like, it's just like, it means that Jews are, and this is such a cultural thing among Jews, like, we're inclined to question and debate. Like, I used to read Hebrew. I don't know how to anymore, but until I was bar mitzvah, I went to Hebrew school for years, and I could read Hebrew, and you have to be able to read it to be bar mitzvah and read from the Torah. And if you look at a page of Hebrew, you just see question mark after question mark. It's acculturated. It's part of Jewish thinking to inquire.
Right.
And then being an ethno-religion, which is interesting because a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people, and you and your question telegraph that you completely are there with that. Like, a lot of people claim it strictly as a religion. So they're sort of like have the attitude that you can take it or leave it. And why would you take it if it causes problems, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not really what's going on, because Jews were originally an ethnicity. And then within that ethnic culture, there was values and ethics and priorities and forms of understanding. A lot of it is very tied up in legal and political thinking. And all that thinking grew a religion. So a lot of those instincts, it's funny because throughout my entire life, I find that my impulses about what's ethical or how to ethically approach something are innately Jewish in a way I wasn't aware of. So it's fascinating. And in a way that a rabbi would say, yeah, this is in the Torah, how you just handle this, you know, like, so it's interesting. So, but in general, with that in mind, I am not a practitioner of the Jewish faith, even though when I became a father, I want my kids to understand they're half Jewish. So we do Hanukkah. Yeah. I want them to know that part of themselves, and they're not going to be bar mitzvah. They won't, they're also, we're here in Northern California in Silicon Valley. They're not surrounded by Jews like what I was in New Jersey growing up. So it's not. It's not, I mean, so it's something I feel like I have to, all puns intended, keep the flame alive. So after becoming a dad, I re-embraced it. But as far as the psychic components of things, incidentally, how a lot of it started was it involved a couple of meaningful deaths. The first one was in 2012, was my grandfather, Abe, and I was very close to him. So when he died, I became aware that he was speaking to me, right? And I understand that for a huge proportion of listeners, possibly yourself included, that might sound like in my imagination or imaginary friend or schizophrenic. And I had the same thought. I was like, okay, maybe I'm just, this is just a mental comfort blanket where I'm imagining him or some version of him giving me advice. And that's that. And whatever it is, it doesn't feel like mental illness as I've experienced, because I've experienced OCD and bipolar mania, ADD, and those things are excruciating. It's like, I won't wish them on anyone, you know, but this was like a very pleasant sort of gentle thing. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go with it. I have an imaginary friend. Right. So this was 10 years or 11 years ago now. And, I didn't take it terribly seriously, even though it was comforting, until my sister said she was experiencing the same thing. And she's not the type that you would expect. It's not that she's not spiritual, because she is, but it was a surprise. And they also weren't as close as me and him were. So it was odd, because I went to visit and she's like, she called him Poppy. I called him Grandpa. She said, Poppy is always talking to me. Like, he's always right here. So I was like, okay, now that's instructive. What is going on? Right. So I kind of just left it there, but he never went away. Like, you would think, okay, he passed on and he's in some other reality and eventually this will fade. But he's actually still around, right? So, okay, so that's phase one. Phase two is in 2015, my wife's father died. And after that, my entire life changed. So up until that point, I was a spiritual person. And I would say, by and large, I was probably agnostic. Like you know, I feel something greater is going on, but I can't quantify it. I don't have hardcore beliefs about it, but it seems to me like, you know, there's no reason to be closed to the idea that we're a part of some greater intelligence or benevolence, or that the world is bigger than what the five senses are showing us, right? That's where I was. But when he died, phenomena, and so this is also the first time I've spoken of this publicly. And it's hard to talk about it publicly just because it instantly gets put under a microscope. It's like people are going to, at a particle level, listen to every word I'm saying and be like, is he full of it or not? But here we go. So phenomena started sparking off in our lives for about 3 months, like crazy. Doors slamming by themselves, loaves of bread being tossed across the counter by themselves, laundry baskets shaking all by itself every day. And I almost like he was having a party. It wasn't scary. It was like, it felt good humored, and he had a good sense of humor. And it was almost like, and not almost like, I would say emphatically, he was trying to reassure us he was okay. And he was that sort of person. He didn't want anybody worrying about him. He didn't want to die. He was a lot older than Rhoda's mom, his wife. Like, he was 20 years older than her. So he really, like, it was his second life. He was in his 80s, and he was young at heart. So, like, he didn't want to leave all of us. He just had grandchildren in the form of my children. And, like so he was not a guy that was, you know, like, in his mind, he was in his 60s, you know? So yeah. I feel, so all these crazy things are happening, right? Then in the less quantifiable zone, he starts touching us. We feel electroshocks, kissing his wife. Like, this is, it's insane, right? So at that point, having witnessed it firsthand, and I know I'm requisitely self-conscious talking about it publicly because there's no way I can prove it, that I saw this, you know what I mean? Or that we all saw it. But in any case, as of that point, there was no putting the toothpaste back in the tube for me. I was like, okay, there is, I can't say absolutely an afterlife, because then again, there's so many questions. Like, we all, like, did you ever see the movie Men in Black?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, at the end of Men in Black, when the story's over, the camera zooms out and out and out and out, then it zooms away from the Earth. Then it zooms away from the galaxy and the solar system and the universe. And then all of it is just a marble in the hand of an alien. And he puts the marble in a bag. Right. Yeah, so I right. always, because my wife and I always talk about what happened after her dad died. Like, you know, it's staggering. Right. So she always says, you know, that's it. There's an afterlife. And I agree with that. But I always counter with the bag of marble theories. Like, then again, we could all just be in the bag of marbles belonging to a giant alien that's a gazillion years old, and this is all a computer game, and the perception of an afterlife is just one other feature of the hardware. And you know what I mean? Like, we have no idea what's going on here. So I'm always very open as to all those things. But in any case, as a human, that experience rewired me. And then a little while after that, I started meditating daily just for anxiety. And then in the course of meditating, I realized, like, okay, this grandfather stuff is coming through sharp, right? Let me see what else is over there. And I mean, to my right. It's always to my right. And this is another odd thing I confirmed online, is that psychics often say, okay, it's near my left or it's near my right. So there's some sort of bilateral binary-based situation happening with that stuff. So it's always to my right. I'm like, there's some sort of valve. Also, incidentally, and I talk about this a lot on the website, when I'm writing, the imaginary materials also come from that valve. So that's interesting too, because it's like creativity and imagination are not too far down the block from all the stuff I'm talking about, right? It's all a form of channeling and interpreting the immaterial into the material. So that was when I found, and this is the last part, that was when I found what appear to be wolves, and there's four of them, and one of them stands in front and does the talking. The other three are triangulated behind him, or I shouldn't say him, because they're not gendered, but they're these wolves. they're beautiful. And that's not political correctness either. I don't know what they are, but they're standing there, and they are the ones that do the talking. So this started happening. And as you might imagine, I was in no rush to start telling people about this. Like, you know, I certainly don't want to be put in a mental hospital, right? So the only person I told was my wife. So she started keeping a notebook of what they were saying. And one of the first things they said was that you should be worried about, this was, when was this, 2019? That we should be worried about the fires. Like, we're always talking about moving. Should we move, relocate? We're adventurous. We always live here and there. And we've lived in Northern California for a while. So we're asking about, should we move? And they were warning us about the fires. We're like, that's not even, like, remotely on our minds. Like, and then the wildfires, which are always bad here, were so bad near us that summer, it was ridiculous. Like, and they're consistently a factor, not this past year, thank God, but in general, they've been more close to us. So that's one of, like, one of 100 examples, right? So, and I'm not, and again, I'm not looking to be pat on the head or, oh, that's amazing, how is this possible? And the odd thing is, I'm not going to lie and say, I'm not going to say I have no ego. I'm not one of those guys. Like, I definitely have pride in my writing, my films, all this stuff. And I'm an artist. I like attention. I like sharing with people and stirring things up and all this stuff. But I have to tell you that my ego is not in this. If I start reading people and it's just botched or it's sloppy, I'll be like, you know what? That was an interesting trip I took, but it's not for me. Or if it goes, and I'm not saying it has to go swimmingly or that there won't be stress and trauma, if it goes and I feel it's useful and that's the experience, then I'll stick with it for, you know, for as long as it goes.
Right. So now what is it that you're doing with the website, and what is it you want? What is it you're looking for, and what can people get when they go to your Psychic Arts Center website? Like, what is it?
You can book a reading, so we can talk directly, and I only ask that people show up, like I said before, with questions, and they can be simple or vague, but just something to get the conversation started. And then also, I wanted it to be unique from other psychic sites, in the sense that I want it to have one leg in consensus reality. Like, again, no criticism of how any other psychic approaches it, but you go to these sites or you go to these places of business, and in general, what you encounter is the outright atmosphere of magic. Like, ooh, come into this zone. Like, ooh, there's music playing, or there's a purple tablecloth. And that stuff is super fun. Like, I'm totally down with all that. But that's not how I am. Those aren't my aesthetics, and that's not what I'm experiencing. And I'm not saying it's not magic or that I would fault anybody for calling it that, because it's definitely an unusual form of experience. But I'm trying on the website, through essays I share of personal experiences, studies that are really cool. And, you know, it's interesting with the studies page. I started looking for studies. I'm like, I'm just going to find one study after another debunking it. But I found so many that support it. And I didn't only put up supportive ones. I put up ones that have, you know, mixed results. And, you know, so people can think and talk about it. Because I even say on one of not on the main page, but on the About Us page, I'm happy to discuss this with people that are skeptical. In some way, that's preferable, because it's like a live wire conversation. This should not be something that's willy-nilly taken for granted as like, oh, you're psychic, let's go. Because I think that's kind of insane. So my vantage point, that's why, you know, I call it the psychic arts, not the psychic sciences, because I think it's more art than science, at least at our current level of consciousness. But I also call it a center, because I wanted to have an environment of, you know, looking into things. I'm going to add more studies. There are book recommendations. I'm going to add more essays. I interviewed Melissa, my mentor, who I spoke of. I'm going to interview more psychics, just so the topic can be explored in a way that's kind of refined. And I'm going to use my journalism skills to do so.
So you're not going to be dressed up like Madame Cleo with the
big... No, as much as I want to. Now you're getting excited. Yeah.
Well, there you go. That would be fun.
Yeah. Lots yeah, what's really interesting, that's a whole other topic, and this inevitably has political overtones, but the other aspect is with gender. Since this has been happening, I more perceive myself as a spirit made flesh. You know, like there's high vibrating material at play in all our existences, and I'm feeling that it's tactile. So it's interesting that concepts of gender mean less to me now than they ever have. And I've always been, you know, non-committal as to that. But I'm certainly a guy, and I love being a guy. You know, it's not like I don't lay claim to anything other, but I also like messing around with gender roles and so forth. And then this psychic experience is actually enhanced and intensified that also. It's like, yeah, it's fun. Like, I don't know. Yeah, we're just, that's, you know, we have different meat parts, but we're also, you know, eternal. There's something bigger happening here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wish you luck and everything. What? I don't know. I never know what to say. That's like,
I know. This, and I also am clear. It's the same with my writing. Like when I do an op-ed, you know, I do those op-eds and the beat. I throw everything at them, but none of my friends are ever under an obligation to read them. I mean, that's ridiculous. Like you can't read everything I do, you know. And it's right. The same with this. Like nobody's going to be cast out of my life for not hanging with it. Like I'd be such a jerk to do that to anyone, because it's so personal what you believe existentially and spiritual. That's up to you. I mean, I can't put my hands on that for a moment. I would never dare to do it to anyone. And if people come in and like, believe me, this is, you want to talk about Jewish, this is the neurotic Jewish business plan. If people come in and the readings aren't flowing, I mean, they are going to get refunded. Like I'm ready. I have my finger over the refund button. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, I'm here to explore it. And that's why I practiced with so many people before I took it out as a public thing.
Right. Well, you know, we wish you luck and everything. And of course, Psychic Art Center will be up on our website. And, you know, it'll all be there for people. And hopefully it all goes to where you want it to go. Do you have any long-term idea? Like when you're doing this, were you thinking, of course, you didn't plan it, but it's all sort of happened. But what's kind of in your mind, what's going to happen over the next 10 years, do you think? Where do you see it going?
You know, I'll say it very plainly, and it's hard. You know, I'm not like an earnest person. You know, I'm very absurd and ironic and all these things, but I really would like to help people. That really is it. Like I found that it gives people a lot of comfort and a lot of positivity. And I feel not just inclined or compelled, but I feel like honor bound to share it. I mean, that's where I am. So it's like, this appears to be going on. It appears to be fertile and active, and it gives these wonderful experiences, which I don't think are snake oil or, you know, or sunshine I'm throwing around. And yeah, I just want to spread that. I have no notion of it being famous or a TV show or me being a television psychic. That would actually be way too stressful. Like there's no there. That's at zero. But I, you know, as a private thing, like, you know, sort of like a shaman calling, like, it's all about spreading positivity. And if we can, if it functions, it functions. I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah, you can have the Madame Robinette show.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Madame Robinette.
Yeah, think about it. Yeah. That would be, you
know, yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad.
It's a whole new name. Well,
yeah, yeah.
Mr. Eric Shapiro, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.